Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in detail.
So good, so good, so good.
Perfect gifts? We've got them at Nordstrom Rack stores now. UGG, Nike, Barefoot Dreams, Kate Spade New York, and more. Find everything on their wish list all in one place.
Steve Madden? Yes, please.
It's perfect.
Did we just score?
The greatest gifts of all time? Yeah.
Head to your Nordstrom Rack store to score. Great brands, great prices, the greatest gifts of all time.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And welcome, everybody, to this year's Halloween special episode.
Nice to see you. To see you nice.
Well, that was short and brief. Short and sweet.
This is the first thing that came to mind. Bruce Forsyth.
Well, he was quite scary.
Yes, he actually did look a bit Halloween-y at all times.
Okay. Most of his career. Good old Bruce.
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I think, what did he go up to, like 89, 91, something like that?
I couldn't tell you.
He was up there.
148 as far as I'm concerned. He was just around forever, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He was quite good on Saturday Night
Television.
I'm sure
he was the first person ever on television, wasn't he?
I think so, yeah. He was one of them classic old geezers on telly. Saturday night, oh, hero.
Absolutely. Yep. Well, it's Halloween, it's our anniversary again.
Yes, happy Halloween, everyone.
Well, almost. This is a few days before Halloween, but...
close enough.
Close enough. Yeah. Close enough.
What spooky things do we have today, Pyro?
Well, if you look on the table in front of you, you'll see a book that we're covering today. But I just wanted to give a quick shout out because a couple of weeks ago we did say that we were kind of running late recording this Halloween episode. And if we had any suggestions, you know, we were all welcome. We did get one from our good friend Keith, who is a member of our Patreon. Good old Keith. Thank you for that, Keith. I did take it on board. He suggested doing The Cage, which is Essex's most haunted house, which I may cover in the future. Not today, but I will put that on the list and we'll have another look. Because I couldn't really find a lot about it in a short time frame to bring to the table today. So we're doing a creature feature.
Ooh.
Last year we did Dracula.
Yeah, you got your dance moves out.
I did. I'm not sure that I'm going to get them out today. But this year, we're doing Frankenstein.
Classic.
Absolute classic. I remember seeing the film of Frankenstein. Well, I've seen a few different films of Frankenstein. But when I was about 15 years old, they released one that was Mary Shelley's Frankenstein that is meant to be like the closest version to the book. Well, they did Dracula and they did Frankenstein, both in the 90s. Mm. Dracula was a massive hit. Frankenstein, not so much.
Yeah.
Did have Robert De Niro in it. He was the Frankenstein's monster, the creation. Probably the best part of the film, to be honest.
Was he Frankenstein?
Yeah, he was Frankenstein's monster, yeah.
He was the monster?
Yeah, he was the creation, yeah.
Oh, I'm Frankenstein.
What you gonna do about it?
I'm walking here.
You looking at me?
I can't picture him as Frankenstein.
Yeah, no, he actually did really well. He sort of killed it as Frankenstein.
Fair play.
But, like I say, he was literally the only one that did. The rest of the film was... It wasn't a hit.
Yeah.
A near miss, I would say. It wasn't bad. It wasn't totally bad, but it wasn't spectacular.
Mm. Did you have that thing where, you know how sometimes the book and the movie are completely different? Did you prefer the book to the movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, from what I can remember of the film, because I couldn't remember really the proper storyline of Frankenstein, and because I was quite young when I watched it. Well, the thing is, when I watched it, I went to the cinema to see it with my mates and a bunch of 15-year-olds. We weren't really particularly interested in the film. We were just messing about, climbing under seats, throwing popcorn at each other, and, you know, generally being teenagers.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah, and so, yeah, I came away from that film not knowing any more about it than when I went in, which is why I decided to buy the book and read it for today's expo. Because I asked you a week or two ago, do you know the story of Frankenstein?
I do, in one sentence pretty much, or two sentences.
Go on then.
A green-looking monster bolts in his neck and he's just kind of terrorising. That's all I kind of know about it.
Okay, so that's totally wrong.
Well, I assume it would be.
One, he's not green. Two, he don't have bolts in his neck.
Is he not?
No.
Where does that come from then?
That comes from the 1931 film of Frankenstein, played by Boris Karloff.
Oh.
He was the original Frankenstein's monster, the original film. That's the one where I think he's actually called Henry Frankenstein rather than Victor Frankenstein in that film. That's the one with the classic line of him going, "It's alive! Yeah. It's alive!"
What are they? They're bolts.
But the picture on the front does not convey the actual Frankenstein's monster. No, yeah, because that's how they depicted it in that 1931 film with the bolts in the neck and they attached like crocodile clips and supplied him with electricity to bring him to life. And he had like the extended forehead and the flat top.
Yeah.
And the black hair, the classic black suit. That is what everybody thinks of as Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster. That's the thing as well. A lot of people think that Frankenstein is the monster.
Yeah, I think they do, don't they?
And all my life I've heard, oh, Frankenstein isn't the monster. It's the scientist that created the monster. Well, I am here to challenge that today.
Oh.
Because I think when I have conveyed to you the actual story of Frankenstein, you will agree with me that Victor Frankenstein, the scientist, is the true monster of that story.
Oh, okay. So I'm guessing people just call him Frankenstein, as in the monster Frankenstein, because it's just easy.
He doesn't have a name.
Ah.
Victor Frankenstein never names his monster. All he ever calls him is fiend or demon or devil or abhorrent creature.
Oh, abhorrent.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
And yeah, never named. So I think we should give him a name.
Frankie Baby.
No, I think in honour of the old 1960s TV programme, The Munsters...
Right, yeah, I remember that.
The Munsters, and that had pretty much Frankenstein's monster, or the classic depiction of Frankenstein's monsters, as the head of the household, and he was called Herman Munster. So I think we should call him Herman.
Herman.
Because it would be easier to identify him rather than me just saying Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's call him Herman.
Herman. Am I right in thinking as well, the guy from Adam's Family was based on Frankenstein? Was it Lurch?
Possibly. The big guy. Yeah, the servant. Possibly.
Yeah, he looks a bit similar to Herman.
Yeah, he's probably a bit more accurate, to be honest. Yeah. 8 foot tall and just... But anyway, yeah, should we dive into that? Because I was going to, like, do this whole, like, thing. Because I think with Dracula last year, I was like, wow, well, what was the inspiration behind Dracula? Mm. And I was going to do a similar thing with Mary Shelley. But there's not really that much to tell on the story. She went over to Geneva in Switzerland with her then-husband. And I couldn't actually pronounce his name, so I didn't bother writing it down. But, yeah, they were over in Geneva and in the Alps when the storms hit. They couldn't go climb in the Alps. They couldn't go wandering around. So they were literally on holiday and they were stuck in the house. So her and her husband and Lord Byron, I think, that they'd gone to visit, and someone else, decided a little competition to see who could make the best horror story. Frankenstein was born.
That's a pretty cool origin story.
Yeah. And she wrote it down. She was only 18 years old at the time.
18?
20 years old when she finished it, and it first published anonymously. She didn't put her name to it. It was just published anonymously. She didn't put her name to it until the second publication, when it came out in France, when it was published from Paris.
Wow. I'm quite impressed by that.
Yeah.
A prodigy.
Very much. Her father was an author as well, though, quite a prestigious one, who's very knowledgeable and well known in, like, political circles and all that sort of thing. So, you know, she had she was well educated.
Good genes. Mm. Yeah.
And yeah, so let's dive into Frankenstein.
Yes.
And the story of Frankenstein, or Victor Frankenstein, it literally goes through his whole life, from his childhood, where he grew up in, or just outside of Geneva in Switzerland. Just, you know, off the lake, Lake Geneva, amidst the Alps. His mother and father had three children. Victor Frankenstein was the eldest. And I think he had two brothers. But they did take on, like, adopted other people's children's. Because, like, bear in mind, this is set in, like, the 1700s, the 18th century.
Okay.
And while Victor was a young boy, his parents started going out into the community and looking after people who were contracting with, like, diseases, like plagues. Smallpox was quite bad around that time.
Leprosy?
Probably not. No, that's a little bit earlier, I would say. But yeah, they took on a couple of young girls. One of them was called Elizabeth. She came down with smallpox. And the mother, Victor Frankenstein's mother, tended to her night and day, even though she was told not to by the doctors and the housemaids and all that sort of thing. She just doted her affection on this girl, because she couldn't have a girl of her own, apparently. Managed to cure young Elizabeth of the smallpox, which is virtually unheard of anyway. Smallpox is a massive killer. Yeah. But it was at the cost of her own life.
Oh, no.
She contracted the disease herself, fell foul to smallpox, and eventually died, leaving Victor's father to bring up all the children, which he did. Victor Frankenstein, from a young age, found himself very in love with, like, sciences. He found some really, really old school authors and books on, like, natural philosophy, as it was called back then. And these were by people who wanted to, like, create the elixir of eternal life, or turn lead into gold and stuff like that, you know, bring the dead back to life.
Yeah.
You know, these are all the old school scientists that believed that there was some kind of alchemy they could do to actually make these things real.
And they actually believed that kind of thing?
Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, yeah.
Wow.
And Victor Frankenstein fell in love with these books and these ideals of these old scientists, and that's what he got interested in. But his father noticed this in his education, even though he didn't really approve of what Victor was studying, he noticed that he was interested in the science. So he sent him off to Germany to a town called Ingolstadt to study. This is another reason why I want to call him Hermann.
Okay.
Because Frankenstein's monster was created in Germany, so he'd be Hermann the German, wouldn't he?
Hermann the German, yeah, yeah. Also, Frankenstein is also a very German-sounding name.
It is, and I believe that there's quite a few places in Germany called Frankenstein, in particular one castle, which may have been visited by Mary Shelley, which gave her the idea for the name of Frankenstein. Oh, yeah.
I wonder if in the future there's going to be a Mandela effect, and this whole time it's not been Frankenstein, but it's been Frankenstein.
Like, Frankenstein, yeah. Like the Berenstain Bears. Yeah, yeah. It might be, yeah. It was actually written with an A.
Yeah. Also, Hermann the German.
And that's what we will call it. Yeah, when we get to that, anyway. Because, yeah, Victor then went to, like say, college. Leaving behind, I must bring this up, his best friend, Monsieur Clerval. His Clerval's father wouldn't let him go to Ingolstadt to study the way that Frankenstein's dad did. And whereas Frankenstein went off to get a proper education, Clerval stayed at home to, I don't know really what he I think it did say, I can't remember now, you know, his dad wanted him to get into the family trade, even though he wasn't particularly interested in it. But Frankenstein goes on, and he goes to university, studies for several years, until he's a young, proper man by this point. Mm-hmm. And now, in Ingolstadt, is where he comes across this plan for reviving dead beings. Or, I think he describes it as a fundamental knowledge of basic life. He never acts, because like you said, when I said describes Frankenstein, you say the bolt in the neck. Mm. And like those early films, they all depict the scientists with this body on a table with bolts in its neck that it attached crocodiles clips to. And then there's a lightning storm, and the lightning strikes the kite on the string and travels down the string and goes through the machines, and then the monster wakes up. None of that is described in this book.
I wonder why we have that image of that.
Because of that 1931 film. That is the impression that it's left on everybody. It's so outstanding, was it, of its time.
Yeah. But
nothing of that is in the film. It says that one Frankenstein originally conceived of this idea of reanimating the dead to bring life where there wasn't before. He decided two things. One was he was going to try it small to start with, like, you know, rats or rabbits or something like that. But he thought, no, not going to do that. If you're going to bring the dead back to life, go big or go home, you know? Yeah, yeah. So he decided that he was going to make this creature like 8 foot tall, absolute hulk of a man. And he spent 2 years sourcing all the body parts, going down the morgue, you know, from the cutting block, I think it says in the book. And, like, this is another thing that I want to dispel, the myth of it, really, is that Frankenstein wasn't put together out of whole body parts. That's what we always think, is like, oh, he was Steve's left arm, Trevor's left leg, Mike's right arm, you know, it wasn't, no. He takes 2 years finding individual organs, finding everything, and putting it all together. Like a madman, basically. He was obsessed with it.
Like a human jigsaw.
Yeah, with the idea, yeah, putting together this human jigsaw. And he doesn't actually ever explain in the book the actual method of bringing it to life. All he says is, the day that it came to life, it terrified me. So he's literally gone from being absolutely obsessed with the creating this creature to being terrified of it and running away. He literally turns tail and just legs it out of the room the minute it starts moving around. He says it's hideous. It's got yellow skin that barely contains the muscles and veins that are underneath it. Black lips of a dead person. Like it's just, yeah, he just describes it as this absolutely hideous, horrendous being that is just torturous to look at. And he's terrified. Mm. So he runs out of his workshop, goes back to his apartment is next door, but goes into his bed chamber, tries to get some sleep, can't sleep particularly well, and then the creature follows him in there, disturbs him, which terrifies him even more, and he just legs it out of the building, waits for daybreak, and then goes wandering around the city, just in this weird trance, I guess. He's starting to lose it by this point. He's a very disturbed person. And he wanders aimlessly around the city until he hears his name being called. And it's his old friend, Clerval.
Ah.
Come to visit him. They've both finished their educations. They're young men, and Clerval's convinced his father that he could go and visit Victor and maybe do some studies, you know, in the sciences that he wanted to study in as well. And Victor then agrees to introduce him to his own maestros, you know, professors, whatnot. And they have a nice meeting. They go back to Frankenstein's apartment, and Frankenstein's like, uh-oh, there's a monster in here somewhere. So he goes in and he's looking through the apartment, can't find it anywhere. It's gone.
Mm.
He's mislaid it. So they sit down and they start having a bit of a chat and a bit of fun and whatnot. And Frankenstein then just becomes absolutely hysterical, and he collapses, faints, and that's him done for apparently a couple of months. He's sick. He's got like this fever. He's bedridden. Clerval has to postpone his own education to look after him.
Christ, smallpox?
Not smallpox. It doesn't actually say what it is. It's just some kind of fatigue. Maybe from it's just weird obsessive behaviour for the last 2 years trying to create this monster.
I mean, I don't blame him for passing out for a few months, because he did create a monster from a dead body or parts of dead bodies. So that's a pretty good excuse to faint.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, obviously when he recovers, he's actually like quite a long time recovering in the book. Him and Clerval are sort of there in Ingolstadt for probably another couple of years before he actually travels home. He gets sent a letter from his father that he's got to travel home because his youngest brother has been murdered.
No.
Yes.
Was it Herman?
At the moment, we're told that it was not Elizabeth, but the other girl that they had adopted.
What?
The William, his brother, had been found strangled, and he'd been given a locket with his mother's photo in it. That was found missing on the child's body, but the photo turned up in the pocket of Justine, I think her name is, the other girl.
Hmm. Sibling rivalries.
So she's been taken into custody, and she's awaiting trial for the murder of his brother. So he travels back from Ingolstadt all the way over to Switzerland, to Geneva, gets off a boat on the docks of Geneva, Lake Geneva, and he says it's a very misty morning or evening, I can't remember, but as he's approaching his father's home, his home, he sees the figure of the creature.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't speak to it or anything, it sort of glides by in the distance and makes its way up a mountain. He says it's like a gazelle. It's up that mountain and gone in no time at all, like faster than any human should be able to do it. But he knows at once that it was the creature that did it, not Justine.
How did he know that he was going to go there?
We will get to that.
Oh.
We will get to that. He and Elizabeth go to the prison and see Justine and say, like, we know you're innocent. Don't worry about it. We'll get you out of here. You know, the truth will come out. And then they find out that she's confessed to the murder. They're like, well, why the hell did you do that? And she's like, well, I was promised a lesser punishment if I confessed. So I confessed, and now they want to kill me.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah,
so she gets hanged.
That ramped up quickly.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Literally, she tells them like the story about on the night that the kid went missing and that, like, she went out wandering around looking for him and stuff, like, couldn't find him, caught out in a rainstorm, found her way to like a neighbor's barn, so slept on a haystack in the barn until morning, and then came home, and the servant women or whatever found the photo in her pocket, and she didn't know how it had got there. But the magistrates at the court told her that maybe she won't be put to death if she confesses to the crime. So she confesses to it, and then they decide that they're going to hang her anyway.
So was it her that actually did it then?
No. No, wow. It was Frankenstein's creation. It was Herman.
Herman did do
it. Yeah, we will get to that. Because after, obviously, she gets hanged, Frankenstein is then in a bit of a turmoil. He knows what's happened. He's convinced of it. He's seen the creature. But he doesn't know what to do about it. So he decides to go looking for it. So he gets on his horse and he goes up the Alps and he's going up through all these trails and higher into the mountains. And these are big mountains as well. Mm. He says it gets halfway and he has to trade his horse for a mule because they're a bit more sure-footed and better at high altitudes and whatnot. Until he gets right up to the top of a mountain and he is approached by the creature. It comes along. Mm. Now, bear in mind, it's been probably over 2 years since he made it.
Yeah, okay.
And it speaks to him fluently.
The monster?
Yeah, the monster can speak. This is the first thing that I thought. It was like, how the hell did it learn to speak? Particularly, and it speaks very eloquently and very fluently. And it says to him, come with me, let me tell you my story, and then we'll go from there. So the creature leads him across the top of the mountain to a little shepherd hut. And there it sits down, and it tells him.
Okay. Yeah.
After he'd created it, it didn't really know, it doesn't remember the first day or so of its life. But somehow it found clothes around his apartment.
In his size.
It's only like, 3 foot taller than he is. But yeah, it found some clothes, a semblance of clothing, put that on, and managed to get out of the building, and it even managed to wander out of the city of Ingolstadt, and it found its way to the woodlands, where it found like a cloak hanging on a tree, so it got a bit more warmth. It didn't know what hunger was or what thirst was, but it had to learn for itself by eating berries and drinking from streams and that sort of thing. It came across like a hunter's fire that someone had just abandoned there and discovered warmth. Didn't know how to create fire, but he found out how hot it was when he stuck his hand in it. He had to learn that like wet wood doesn't burn. And put dry wood on it, and I think it stayed there for a couple of days before it moved on, found another little town.
But he's learned all the crucial things you need to be able to speak fluent.
Not yet. Doesn't know how to speak yet
at
this point. It comes across a little town, and obviously this being either France or Switzerland, somewhere on the border, the people baking fresh pies, putting them out on the windowsills to cool down and whatnot, and that it starts nicking bread and food and cheese and stuff off the windowsills until someone sees him, shrieks in horror because he's obviously such an ugly creature, and it gets chased out of town, literally, you know, like pitchforks, classic, you know, mob chasing it out
like
of town.
Shrek style.
Yeah, just like that. And he just wanders across the fields and whatnot until he finds, I think it's just a little independent cottage in the middle of nowhere with a pigsty on the side of it. And he makes the pigsty his home. He calls it his hovel.
Right.
And it's literally, I think, just a bunch of sticks leaning up against the side of the house, because he said he patched it up with like moss and wood and stuff like that. And he stayed there the first night, just at least he's got somewhere dry to sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
He was happy for that. And the next morning he notices a girl walking past with a bucket, and then she walks back past about half an hour later and the bucket's full of milk. And then he realises that she lives in the house. And she lives there with her brother and her father. Of course, he doesn't know any of this at the moment. He literally watches through a crack in the wall and learns their like social behaviours. He learns the word for father, and he learns that like the younger ones have got different names. I think it's Felix and something else, but they call each other brother and sister and stuff. But the old man's only called father. The father is blind, right? So the girl spends most of her days tending to the father and just like doing little bits and bobs in the garden, collecting milk, you know, stuff like that, making cheese and butter. Whereas the boy goes off and he works somewhere else on a farm, and he'll come back every night with like firewood, and they'll sit down and have their meal together. And Frankenstein's monster, Herman, absolutely loves this family. He falls in love with this family. Because all he really wants is companionship, someone to show him the way in life, and you know, teach him, educate him. But he's got to do it from afar, because even when he looked in a puddle and saw his own reflection, he was repulsed by it.
His own reflection.
He was scared of his own reflection the first time he saw it.
That's sad, isn't it?
Yeah. So he realizes what a monster he is. He knows he's been created. Over the months that he stays there, he starts helping them by collecting firewood for them and stuff like that, just leaving it on the doorstep.
And they're not aware of him still?
No, they're not aware that he's living there, no, because he's hiding away in this pigsty. Mm. But every morning they come out and see a fresh pile of firewood, they thank the good spirits that they think like they've got like a fairy godmother or something that's doing this for them. But it's not as hideous Herman the German. The young lad, he has done something. I can't remember exactly the storyline, but he's helped out an elder of an Arabian villager or something like that, helped him get free from captivity, who then sent his daughter to marry the young lad.
Okay.
And it's when this daughter turns up, she doesn't speak the language either, because she's from Arabia. So the three of them in the family start teaching her how to speak French. And that is when Frankenstein's monster, let's call him Herman, starts learning actually how to speak properly. Because he's just watching through the crack in the wall and he's picking up on her lessons.
So he speaks French then?
So yeah, he speaks French.
Is it Frankenstein?
He learns to speak French. And one day when the three younger ones are out, he actually approaches the old man. He plucks up all his courage, and he's like, because he wants to be sort of taken on board by this family. He goes and speaks to the old man, who's blind, doesn't know what he looks like.
Ah, that's a bonus.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Herman goes in there and he's like, oh, do you mind if I warm by myself by your fire and stuff? And the old man's like, yeah, yeah, come on in, have some hot cocoa and whatnot, you know. Frankenstein's like, oh, thank you. No one's ever given me anything in life. Like, you know, I just want to fit in. I've been learning, you know, to speak French and that, like, from a family that doesn't even really know I exist because I hide from them. And the old man's like, oh, well, you know, who is it? And just as Frankenstein starts to tell him, you know, oh, it's you. I've been living in your pigsty for the last 2 years. The other ones come back, walk through the door, see this massive hulk of a monster that they think is attacking their father. And again, pitchforks come out and they're chasing him down. Like, and off he goes again, off into the wilderness. Now, because he's been learning to speak and about language, he finds the notes in his clothes pocket that that Victor Frankenstein made while he was creating him. So he's literally got the notes on his own creation. So he knows of Victor Frankenstein now, where to find him. And he decides that he's going to go and find his creator.
Picture this, you're halfway through a DIY car fix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realise you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything, brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need, and it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need at prices you'll love, guaranteed to fit every time. eBay, things people love.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
It's like a birth certificate.
Sort of, yeah. But when he goes down to Geneva looking for him, he comes across the young boy, William Frankenstein's brother, who instantly gets terrified of him. Mm-hmm. And like, imagine this massive monster encountered by a little boy going, "Ah, get back, go away, you foul creature, be off with you, beast, fiend," and all this. "I'll get my father Frankenstein to come and tear your eyes out," or whatever. And the mention of the word, as the name Frankenstein, he loses it and he just throttles the kid to death. Mm. Instantly regrets it.
Okay.
But realizes that he's accountable for this death and people might come looking for him. So he takes the locket, finds the photograph, the mother, and as he's wandering around, he comes across this girl who's asleep in a barn and puts it in her pocket. So the blame's not on him.
That's quite clever for a...
for a two-year-old monster, yeah. Yeah.
For a guy that's 8 foot tall and been, well, alive for 2 years, technically. Yeah.
So, this... that's how that came to happen. And now, obviously, they're set out. He's encountered Victor Frankenstein. He's come home. They've encountered him. He told him his story. And what he really wants is for Frankenstein to create him a companion, a female, a woman, a lover.
Frankenella?
Bride of Frankenstein, if you like.
Is that a thing? Is there...
there was a film called Bride of Frankenstein, yeah.
Also, any good?
I don't know, never seen it. But yeah, he just wants companionship because he realises what a hideous creation he is. No one in society is going to accept him from what he's learned already. Every time he's tried to integrate himself, people have just shrieked and chased him out of town with pitchforks. So he's like, create for me a companion, a female, a woman who looks as bad as me, basically. Yeah. You know, someone that only I can love.
Looks, one.
Not so important. Just make sure she's 8 feet tall.
Yeah. But then she'd be 8 foot two in heels or something, wouldn't she?
Yeah, I suppose.
That's quite sad, isn't it?
Yeah.
The fact that he just wants companionship.
And reluctantly, initially, Frankenstein agrees to do it.
Oh, okay.
Right. Reluctantly. So, yeah, they go off their separate ways. Anyway, Herman is happy that Frankenstein's going to create him. He says, "I'm going to keep watch over you, but nothing else bad will happen so long as you make good on your promise."
Okay, so Herman's now like, "Look, I'm going to be in the background."
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. No, I'm not going to kill any more of your family or nothing as long as you find me, you know, the love of my life.
God, what an ultimatum. Certain death for your family or realive another dead person. That is nuts. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, Frankenstein, his father, by this point, obviously they're all sort of grown up by now. Elizabeth is a young woman, an actual woman, not just a little girl anymore. And Frankenstein's father's like, "Well, originally me and your mum had this idea that when we took on Elizabeth, that, you know, hopefully you two would grow up and marry, and, you know, because he says, is that not what you do? You not see her as a potential partner? Have we in error made her more of a sister to you rather than someone that you take on as your wife? And Frankenstein's like, no, I'll marry Elizabeth. Yeah, no problem. But first, I just got this thing I got to take care of. and he puts it under the guise that he needs to go to England to speak to some scholars to learn some newfangled theory or whatever. Okay. So him and Clerval travel to England, go to Oxford and seek out their scholars or whatnot. Clerval, I think, is sent a message from someone that he knows up in Perth in Scotland. So they travel up there, and from there on, Frankenstein thinks, oh, this is pretty tranquil up here. This might be a good place to make this extra creation.
Okay.
So he leaves Clerval in Perth in Scotland, and he travels right up the north, gets on a boat and goes to the Orkney Islands. And even in the book, he says there's no one there. There's only like five families living on this island that he decides to set up his workshop in. So quite where he's getting the body parts from, I'm not entirely sure. Mm. But he starts work creating Frankenstein a mate. Yeah?
Okay, so he's doing good on his promise.
He's making good on his promise. But he can't go through with it.
Why he's like, now?
I can't. He said, I can't bring myself to create another aberration to this world, another hellish creature that shouldn't. You know, I should never have created the first one. I can't create a second one. And he starts destroying it. At which point,
man.
Herman shows up and goes, "Not a good move, mate. Not a good move.
I want to eat your face."
He says, "Why? Why can't I have what everyone else can have? Why can everybody in the world partner up together, have children, have a life, have happiness? Why am I the only one destined to walk this world alone forever? And you have brought this on me."
Yeah.
He said, "If that is what you're condemning me to, then just know this. I will be there on your wedding night."
Mm. Another threat.
And that is his only threat. And he leaves.
Herman's gone. He's out of there.
Herman disappears again. He spends most of the book disappeared, to be honest. You don't actually see a lot of him. It's more about actual Frankenstein, which is the title.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Victor Frankenstein then thinks, right, okay, I got a cabin here with a very mutilated body in it that if anyone finds, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I'd say so.
So under the cover of night, he bundles it into a boat and he sets off into the North Sea, off the Orkney Islands, until he's a few miles out. He said he goes past a few fishing boats and whatnot that are out in the early morning, and then he literally like ties stones to it and casts what remains he's got overboard.
Okay.
And then he gets lost at sea for a day or two. Washes up on Ireland. So he's gone from the Orkney Islands, like at the top of Scotland, all the way down to Ireland, around the Outer Hebrides.
Right.
Right. And the Irish aren't particularly happy to see him.
Oh, what?
And he's like, "What? Don't I get a nice welcome?" And they're like, "No, we don't like murderers around here." And he's like, "What do you want about?" And they're like, "Well, someone got murdered last night, and it was a guy that it was supposedly a guy in a boat that looked like yours that done it, because you know some locals sort of saw that, some hulking creature in a boat."
Right. I see what's happened here.
Yeah. So they take Victor to the magistrate again. So again, he's in trouble. And the magistrate decides to say, well, he's obviously professing his innocence. He's like, "Well, I wasn't even here. How can it be me? And they're like, "Well, right. Well, we'll take you to the body and see how you react to it." And he's like, "Well, I ain't going to react, am I? I haven't got a clue, you know, what happened here." They take him into the room. Who's the body? Clerval.
No.
Yeah, his best mate that he left in Perth.
Christ, this Herman is one step ahead.
Oh, yes.
So he's taught himself how to speak, but he's also given himself a great education.
Oh, yeah.
So people that are homeschooled are actually doing all right.
Yeah. But, yeah, obviously, at the sight of his dead friend, he loses it. Yeah. So they put him in prison, and he's there, like, awaiting trial. His father gets wind of it, sends some letters, convinces the magistrate to, you know, hold on, let me go and prove my son's innocence. So he travels all the way from Switzerland to Ireland to get his son out of prison, Victor Frankenstein, out of prison, which he manages to do. He acquits him.
Okay.
By proving that he wasn't in Ireland until that morning when he landed on the shore and everybody found him. He said up until then he was up in the Orkneys. I've got proof, you know, letters and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Addressed and dated and whatnot. So they do let him go, but he's now down a best friend. Mm. And his father takes him back to Switzerland.
I've noticed a theme here.
What, trouble following him around?
No. Is this going to be like one of them life lessons where Herman wanted him to be just as lonely as he was?
Yeah, sort of.
Have I jumped kind ahead? Of is.
Yeah, no. You're about in the right place, to be honest. Like, because I mean, we're starting to push for time anyway. But yeah, when I get back to Switzerland, Frankenstein's father is like, look, you're going to have to sort your life out. Get married. All right. Put all this behind you. Elizabeth's family has now passed on and actually left her quite a wealthy, a decent estate. Just, you know, just up the river. Take that. Marry her. Go and settle down over there and sort your life out. So that's what they decide to do. They get married, but in the as a forewarning to Elizabeth, because she sends him a letter going, oh, don't you want to marry me, sort of thing. Like, how come you disappeared off to Scotland for months and months and months on end without you know when we were betrothed to be married? And he said to her, I can't tell you, but I have a terrible secret. I will tell you what it is the day after our wedding, which in hindsight isn't really the best idea.
No.
But that's what he says. He says, if we can get through our wedding night, then I will tell you what my secret is. So they get married. They travel from his estate in Geneva to hers, which I can't remember exactly where it is. I think it did say the name of the town, but I can't remember. And they're there on their wedding night. Frankenstein's obviously quite tense.
Right, yeah.
He's pacing the house. He's like, I must keep an eye out. Must keep an eye. He's literally all the time. He's armed with a pistol and a dagger at this point. He's so paranoid.
He means business.
Yeah. He's worried about Herman. And he sends his wife to bed. Mistake. Because obviously he's up pacing the house looking for Herman. Where's Herman? In the bedroom waiting for the wife.
How does Herman do it?
So Frankenstein hears a scream, runs upstairs, finds his wife dead on the bed. Oh. Trademark strangulation.
Okay.
And Victor, obviously, in woes of crying woefully. I don't know. He collapses on his partner's body and he's like, oh, what to come of you, blah, blah, blah. And he looks up at the window and there's Herman looking at him, grinning, going, I told you what had happened. And he takes a pop shot at him with a pistol, but misses. Herman jumps off the building, dives into the river, and yeah, that's the last Frankenstein sees of him. So Frankenstein has to bury his literally brand new wife.
Yeah. As well as his best mate not too long before that.
Yeah. Now, at this point, I just want to bring up... Now, you asked me, was there any big differences or what did I prefer, the film or the book?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the biggest difference that I found between them. See, in the 1994 film, Frankenstein is so besotted with his wife, he can't deal with the loss, that he then puts her back together, brings her back to life.
Okay.
But it's a double-edged sword because she was quite a pretty thing in life, and once he's stitched her back together and brought her back from the dead, she takes one look at herself in the mirror, is absolutely horrified by her own appearance, and consequently sets herself on fire and kills herself.
On fire?
Yeah.
What
That's
a way.
In the film. In the book, that does not happen. That is literally just creative license.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Christ, he's
and
on fire.
Literally, he then basically just takes it on himself to track down Herman and destroy him at any costs. And Herman literally just goads him on. He's just like, yeah, come on, a little bit further. And he leads him further and further north, up through Europe, up through Russia. And all the time, just leaving him little signs saying, yeah, no, we won't be long now. We can have this out. You know, you keep going. I've left you a dead hare there. You can heat that up and eat it and, you know, stuff like that. And honestly, he does. And on they go further and further north until they're literally just on icebergs. And Victor Frankenstein's got a sledge and dogs, and he's chasing the monster.
Where's he got that from?
Just from villagers and whatnot that he finds on the way. He's got money. He pays for stuff, like, you know, and, you know, buys supplies and clothing that he needs because he's going into colder and colder climes. So is the monster, but the monster is apparently unaffected by the cold. That's why he's like, I'll lead you here where you're going to be miserable, but it doesn't affect me.
He's also a detective, apparently, as well. Because he's able to find him and...
Days ahead, yeah, and can move faster than a speeding bullet, yeah, sort of thing. But, yeah, eventually Frankenstein is closing in on Herman, never quite gets to him, never quite makes it, and eventually he ends up being rescued by an English captain, Walton, who is actually writes the first three chapters of the book. It's his own account of the story. The first three chapters of Captain Walton's journey from England. He's in search of the North Pole. He wants to be the pioneering person who first reaches the North Pole. And finds Victor Frankenstein with only one dog left alive on his sled, just literally floating randomly around in the sea on the top of an iceberg. And like hoiks him on board his ship and just starts like trying to look after him, but Frankenstein his health is declining. He's getting worse and worse and worse and worse, and eventually Frankenstein dies on the boat, never having vanquished the creature that he wanted to end the existence of, that he created in the first place.
Right,
and it's then, right at the very last chapter of the book, that Walton, the captain of the ship, gets visited by Herman, who's come to see Frankenstein's dead body. And Captain Walton's like, well, you know, what was going on? Why now? Why have you come to see him now? He's like, well, there's so much I regret. He was like, I never intended to kill the small boy that started all this off. That was a mistake, he said. And then when in Scotland, when I killed Clerval, he said, terrible grief for that. I really didn't want to do it. I feel terrible about it. But it's Frankenstein's insistence to carry on with his own good life and have his wedding, have his marriage, have everything that I couldn't have. And he would deny me of that. And it was so tormenting. He said it was all encompassing. It's all I could think of. He said, now that Frankenstein is dead, I'm quite happy to end my own life. And that's literally what it does. It jumps out of the window of the ship onto another iceberg and it intends to go and kill itself. And that is the end of Herman, the end of Frankenstein. It's such an unrewarding ending, to be fair.
That story was full of curveballs.
Yeah.
I did not see Herman. That is actually very different to what I thought Frankenstein was.
But that is the actual story of Frankenstein. He didn't actually... He was the creature on the slab. He was created by Frankenstein. He was Frankenstein's monster. But he actually didn't kill actually that many people. didn't go on this bloodlust frenzy, you know, through the cities, like literally just hacking people to pieces, like people pulling them, tearing them limb from limb and whatnot. Mm. Like everybody thinks that Frankenstein's monster did. And this is why I think, and I'm sure that I can convince you, that Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein, is the monster of the story. Because it's his own selfish passion that starts it in the first place. He's obsessed with this idea that he can bring the dead back to life. So all-encompassed is it that he doesn't think, should I do it? He just thinks, can I do it? He doesn't think of the consequences of his actions. And then when it works, he just casts it aside. Like, literally like a newborn baby. He's just like, no, I don't want nothing to do with you. You're hideous. Get out. You know, forces it to fend for itself. And then is surprised when it comes back with a vengeance.
Mm.
And then all he wants to do at the end is kill it.
Yeah, not even negotiate.
No.
Yeah, he is a bit of a
monster. So to me, Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein, the scientist, is more of a monster than Herman, the green-skinned, bolt-necked, flat-top-headed, black suit-wearing monster.
Yeah. What a crazy story. I like it, though. I think it's... because it's so different to what I was expecting.
Yeah?
I quite like it. That really has thrown me because I can't imagine, like, it's...
Everyone thinks they know what who Frankenstein is or what it's all about. But really, until you actually read the book and it's, you know, the authentic old English that it's written in, and it is quite a hard read in places, you just don't realise what a depressing story it is, to be fair.
But he doesn't even seem that scary, does he?
No.
When you break it down into the fact that he just, from pretty much the start, he said he wanted a companion like him. I mean, there's no excuse to kill everyone close to him. But then he did warn him.
Yeah, he did give him fair warning. I'll be there on your wedding night.
I'll be there in the background until you do this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I'm going to give Frankenstein. Do you know what? Halloween special. It's a creature feature. It's a classic. And because it did actually throw me, I did not know that that was the story. And there's a little bit of romance in there. There's a little bit of thriller.
It's got a bit of everything.
It has, it has.
Good morals, bad morals.
I am going to admit, I do have a soft spot for Dracula more than Frankenstein.
Yeah, so do I, to be fair.
It is a little bit cooler, but you know what? It's Halloween. I'm going to give it an 8.2.
That's terrible.
Do you reckon?
Oh, yeah, I'm going to give it 9.5. I love 9.5? Frankenstein. Yeah, I like him more now than I did beforehand. Probably because I have actually read it. You know, all the intricacies and the nuances that you find in the book. I mean, from me just telling you the story in 45 minutes, you're not going to be as, you know, endeared to it as what I am.
Yes. But yeah,
I thought it was an amazing book. And the fact that I'm not particularly influenced by films, because, I mean, Frankenstein has been in a lot of films. You know, Hotel Transylvania, Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein. Like I say, Bride of Frankenstein, so many films that are literally the story of Frankenstein or meant to be some kind of adaptation of it.
But they always seem to make him quite dumb and slow in things. But he's not. Things.
Yeah, he's not. He's very intelligent.
The reason I'm going 8.2 is because I know it's a fiction book. But
yeah,
like,
it is, yeah.
There's certain things. Like, I want to know, how did Herman know where to be at what time? Like you said at the start, he was going somewhere up the mountain and he saw he was already there.
Yeah.
Like, how did he know to go there?
I don't really know. I think Victor was just off on a bit of a mad one, to be honest. Because he'd seen the creature climbing up the mountain when he arrived back in Switzerland.
Mm.
He just thought that's probably his best shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are a lot of coincidences in it.
And the ending was a bit... I wanted a bit more.
Yeah, like the bride when he brought her back to life in the film, and then she obviously then set herself on fire and killed herself in the film. Mary Shelley kind of missed a bit of a trick on that one, because that was quite a decent little turn of events. But, you know, she didn't put that in the book.
Oh, she should have done. Then that would have been a lot higher for me. But it's still a good story with plenty of curveballs. So
I thought I'd at least get an 8.5 out of here.
Do you know, that was the other thing I was thinking. I was going between 8.2 and 8.5, and I'm thinking, but it's just the ending and the inconsistencies from Herman himself. Well,
I quite like the ending because it's not a Hollywood ending.
Oh, like riding off to the sunset. And
yeah, I mean, or if Frankenstein, Victor Frankenstein, the scientist, had actually managed to catch up with his monster and kill it, and go, "Now I am victorious, I made you and I will kill you, stab," you know, that would have been very Hollywood. That but it's not, it's Herman that actually gets the one up on him. Do you know what I mean? So I like that about it. And then he's like, right, well, I've got no other reason for my existence. I'll see you later. And that's it. You don't know what actually happens to him. He says that he's going to go and kill himself, but you don't know.
Well, when you put it like that,
there could be a Frankenstein 2.
It's more poetic when you put it like that. Like he did get the one. You know what? It's Halloween. I'll grant you your wish. 8.5.
Okay, cool. Well, if I, what did I say? 9.5.
Yeah.
Well, that gives us a 9 average and flat, doesn't it? Which is pretty good for a Halloween special.
Yeah.
Considering the absolutely abysmal last couple of weeks scores we had.
Yeah. They can't all be high scores.
Well, they can't, no. And this is fiction, but it's good fiction and it's Halloween. And there's nothing more Halloween than Frankenstein, is there?
Yeah. So. I mean, if we carry on with these creature features, we're going to be running out in like 3 years' time for Halloween.
I've pretty much already run out now. Dracula and Frankenstein. I mean, what else is there? Werewolf. Wolfman. Yeah.
Wolfman, maybe. Werewolf.
Maybe.
Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf.
All the wolves.
Just doing an hour review on Teen Wolf.
I think that's about witches. There's actually...
Who knows?
There's,
maybe we'll think of something else for next Halloween.
There's more to witches, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Halloween special. Cool.
That was a good one.
What do you think about that?
Yeah. Right, anyway, that will wrap it up for this episode. if you would like to, you can always join our Patreon like Keith did, and he sent us the email suggesting the Halloween episode about the cage, as I mentioned at the start. You could also do the same and suggest something for next year.
Yeah.
If you can think of something that isn't Dracula or Frankenstein, we'd love to hear it.
And we have also done requests for people for other
subjects. We do requests.
Yeah, if you do think of anything that you want us to cover, we'll dive into
it. Let us know.
Like we said, nothing's off the table or on the table.
Paranormality.uk@gmail.com.
Yes.
And until next time, good night out there, whatever you are. Nah, I'm joking. I'm Pirate.
I'm Josh.
This has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta. I was about to say I'm Josh anyway because I didn't know what to say. Good night. I'm Josh.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
Meet Claude, Anthropic's AI assistant, ready to transform how your organization works. Empower every person in your organization with AI that thinks like a teammate, not a tool. Securely upload your company knowledge and watch as Claude helps every department, from engineering to marketing, produce their best work faster. Your data stays protected while your teams reach new heights. Discover enterprise-grade AI at anthropic.com/enterprise.
What makes a great pair of glasses? At Warby Parker, it's all the invisible extras without the extra cost. Their designer quality frames start at $95, including prescription lenses, plus scratch-resistant, smudge-resistant, and anti-reflective coatings, and UV protection, and free adjustments for life. To find your next pair of glasses, sunglasses, or contact lenses, or to find the Warby Parker store nearest you, head over to warbyparker.com. That's warbyparker.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.